the opinions you love, the history you crave. This is Rant DM Radio.
Today, here on the Lex Podcast, episode 3, Confessions of a GameStop Employee. Hey everyone, my name's Lex, and I thought I'd do an information podcast, an info podcast, if you will, on my time with GameStop. 6 years, to be exact. 6 years at GameStop. Just recently quit. November of last year. And I thought, you know what? This is a long time in the making. I've been wanting to do this even when I was employed with GameStop. But now that I'm not, and everything's behind me, I have time to reflect. Hopefully get some information in there, answer some of your questions. Now, this episode was actually in jeopardy of not making air this week because I got sick. I got a gastrointestinal virus and was basically shitting my brains out for the past couple days. One of the worst illnesses I've ever had because I was constantly hungry, but, you know, everything would go straight through me. And I was watching these videos on YouTube and while I was laying in bed about, you know, food reviews and stuff like that. People talking about food on Facebook. And it was just miserable. So I'm still recovering, actually. I'm still on the mend today. You know, I'm not feeling the greatest, but decided, you know what, I'm feeling good enough to get this podcast done and get this out here because it's something that people have been looking forward to for a while now. This is not the only episode of a GameStop Confessions that I will have. I will actually probably bring somebody else on and kind of rap with them a bit more because it's kind of hard to talk about GameStop when you're there for 6 years. And you've had so many experiences, they kind of just all blur together. And so I was confused about how to do this format, so most of it is just me answering your guys' questions. I give a little bit of background info about my time with GameStop, how I got into GameStop, why I left, and some things that happened in the middle. But there's a lot to talk about, just in general, and I will be doing more episodes on GameStop in the future, but I'm going to do this one. Let you guys take it in, give it a little rest, and then march forward with a new episode next week. The Lex Podcast has been going very well, and I want to thank everybody who's been listening to it. I'm very pleased with the amount of downloads that it's gotten, and very humbled that you'd want to take the time to listen to me ramble and rant here. Last week's episode with Ryan Chambers went very well, and we will have Ryan Chambers back on, of course. I do want to let you know that if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at lexmarston, LexMarston, @gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter @the_lexicon, and I'll be back at the end of the podcast to wrap it up, so enjoy the show. I worked for GameStop for about 6 years. I was hired in August of 2007, and I gave my notice in November of 2013. GameStop was my, officially it was my third job, but technically it was my fourth job. My first job I got when I was 18. As a pizza delivery guy for a pizza place in my hometown. I got it through, my dad was friends with the owner, and basically I made really good money there, but I was only paid in tips.
I didn't make a wage, and so I mean, technically it wasn't you know, a legal job or whatever, but I made really good money there, especially for only working maybe 4.5-5 hours a day, 5 days a week. There are nights where I would make like $125 just off tips, and I would get to fill my car up with gas because I would use my car most of the time. And then I moved up to Redding, California, and I basically I moved there for school and to be with my then fiance, now wife. And it was one of those things where the owners could see the writing on the wall, even though I was still traveling to my job, which was an hour away. You know, I enjoyed it, and I was making good money, so I was going to keep doing it, but they saw the writing on the wall, they got someone new in, and, like, he was a student at the high school, and I started making less money, and started getting less opportunities to deliver, even though I was the better delivery guy. Anyway, I'm not going to harp on that, but, so I moved to Reading. I had to find a new job. My second job was at Hometown Buffet. And basically, I just had to find a job. I had to find one quickly, so I was applying everywhere I could. I didn't really want to work there, but I lied my ass off telling them I did want to work there. You know, what you do when you need a job. And they liked me, so they gave me a job, and I was hired, and I think I was hired in April or May of 2006, and I only lasted there about a month or two. I hated it. Hometown Buffet was the worst. Hometown Buffet was the absolute worst. Anything that I say about GameStop today, it could be taken in stride when compared to having to work at Hometown Buffet. It was a grueling job. I had to wear very uncomfortable shoes, and I was essentially like the busboy, kind of. I didn't bus any tables. What I did was I collected and refreshed the plates, and I made sure there was ice in the soda machines, made sure all the soda syrup was hooked up, you know, stuff like that. And I was also, it was called B&D, Beverage and Dessert, so I was kind of responsible for the desserts, making sure the toppings were refilled. The ice cream machine, I had to come in at like 6 in the morning and clean the ice cream machines out, which was just the worst. And so I got an opportunity to work for Target, and that was my third job. You know, technically, you know, on the official level, that was my second job, Target, but I got the opportunity at Target, and I was actually working both places for a little tiny bit, and I decided, I'm gonna go ahead and just work Target. So it's a little bit less hours, but honestly, the work is less strenuous, and I probably have a better opportunity of lasting here at Target. So I work Target, and I work, they call it Food Avenue, which is a little food court that every Target I've ever seen has. You get your popcorn there. It's usually the first thing you see when you walk through the doors. And I didn't really want to work food again, but I, you know, it was better than working food at Hometown Buffet. So I decided, okay, we'll do this, and I eventually got to parlay that into working in electronics, which is cool on some levels. Other levels, it was just awful, because usually when you're working in electronics at Target, you're the only person back there working. Now they have like the cell phone representative back there, so at least you have another person back there that can look after something if you leave the main area. But I was working back there alone, and they have these little buttons that people press. And they press the button, and it buzzes us on the walkie-talkies, you know, someone is needed in electronics, and they give you like 15 seconds to get over there, or if you don't, they report it to the main office, which sucked. So I didn't like working electronics there, but I wanted to work with video games. And we had, at the time, 3 GameStops in town, probably within about 2 miles of each other. And so I think I applied at every one of them. And one responded. And they gave me an interview, and we hit it off. And I was hired by GameStop in August of 2007. So I worked at Target for about a little over a year before I got with GameStop. And then I worked both GameStop and Target until about May of 2008. That's when I stopped working for Target. And I just focused on GameStop. GameStop was, in contrast to Target and Hometown Buffet, it was pretty cool. The thing I liked about Target was that the corporation really took care of you in terms of making sure you get your breaks on time and making sure that morale was kept up. They would have like food days constantly in the break room, and they would just load tables up with all kinds of good food from the floor. You know, like Oreo cookies and nachos and this and that. It was great. It was phenomenal. They had an arcade machine up in the break room, too. I think it was like a Midway arcade game. So it had like Joust and the Bubble game. I forget. I think it might even be called Bubbles. I mean, there's just a lot of cool stuff up there. They would grab a movie off the shelf and bring it up to the break room, and that would stay in the break room, and we get to watch that brand new movie that just came out. Unfortunately, it was Ghost Rider, and I hated it, and we probably watched that thing about 50 million times. But in contrast, working for GameStop was much better than working for Target in the sense of being comfortable with what I was working with. I was very comfortable around video games. That's not to say I didn't have my screw-ups at GameStop. I surely did. I believe it was very shortly after I got there. Maybe, because I was hired for seasonal. And for people that don't know what seasonal is, they hire you for Christmas and Thanksgiving. And, you know, they fire you after that and say, thanks for the help. We got to cut staff again, so maybe next year. Well, they kept me on after seasonal because they liked how I worked. But I think Smash Brothers Brawl came out in April of 2008, I believe. And that was my first midnight launch that I worked. And I screwed up big time because in the system, when you have a reserve, there's, you know, you press F1 to add money, and you press F7 to officially pick up the game. Well, I was confused as to, okay, well, they're picking up the game, but it's not out yet, quote-unquote, because we were ringing people up at, like, 10 at night before it was supposed to come out, you know, at midnight. So I would press add money, add money, add money. Well, so all the transactions I did, which was probably over 100 transactions, it was supposed to have picked up the game and that would adjust our inventory. Well, I didn't do that. I pressed add money and just paid off the game. And so the next day when they found out, oh, our inventory's off by like 100, what happened? You know, I got a call from the assistant manager and he was screaming at me. I didn't answer the phone. I wasn't around the phone or something like that. I got a call from the assistant manager, who later on we became friendly, but he was livid. He's like, buddy, we got a big problem here. You did this when you should have done that. And if you can't get a simple thing like that right, I don't think you need to be working here. And so I called back when I heard the message. And I talked to the manager, who was actually a very nice lady. Manager hired me, obviously. And she said, you know, I'm sorry he called you like that. He shouldn't have done that. It was a mistake. You're kind of new, first time doing this. Just next time you need to do this instead of this. I'll talk to him, you know, and all that stuff. So she smoothed everything over. That was like my first kind of like, ugh, you know, what the hell, why, you know. I know it was a big mistake that I made. I knew I screwed up, but man. There was another time where I was kind of, I think this was pretty early on, and I was answering phones, because the new people, usually you give them a phone to answer. You know, you can't really screw up answering the phone. Somehow I figured out a way to do it. So I answer the phone, and during the holidays, a big thing is prank calls. People love to call in and prank whoever answers. A lot of the times it was harmless stuff like Battletoads and stuff like that. Well, this person was kind of talking to where I couldn't really understand what they were saying. And they started saying stuff, and you know, I was like, what? And when I can't understand something, but I think maybe I did, I say it over again. And we had a black guy working with us, and he was standing at the register. Very nice guy, by the way. And he was standing at the register helping someone out. I'm standing behind him, behind the counter, talking to this person on the phone. And they say something, and I was like, chocolate salty balls? And he turned around and gave me the look. And I've never gotten this look ever. He gave me this look like I was the biggest dumbass in the world. And I didn't realize it until I had said it. I was like, oh, crap. You know, what did I, you know, why did I just say that out loud? Because there was customers right there and everything like that. And I tried to play it off like, is that what you said? Is that the game you're looking for? Blah, blah, blah. So I definitely had my bumps in the road when I first started. But I was actually a really good employee. And they had an opening. The rank is store manager at the top, assistant store manager. So SM, ASM. The third in line is the SGA, the senior game advisor, who is basically a shift manager, given a lot of responsibility, but paid the crappiest out of the three. And so they had someone leave, or that was leaving, and they came up to me and said, you know, the person recommended you to take their spot. I think that's a good idea too. What do you say? And I was like, I don't really know. I don't. That's not really my cup of tea. That's not my bag. Is you know, being responsible for money and being responsible for, you know, a whole shift, the employees on the shift. You know, what happens if a robbery takes place? And I was like, yeah, that's not really me. I think I'll pass. They're like, well, I'd really like you to reconsider because I think you'd be best for it. And you know, just give it some time and get back to me. I said, all right. And I talked to my wife about it. And she said, you know what? You might as well give it a try. Just give it a try. See what happens. It's more money. You know, we could use more money right now. And so I was like, okay. All right, I'll give it a try. Why not? So my wife and I got married in June. Wow. Hope she doesn't listen to this. here's what I'm thinking, anyway. We got married in June. We took our honeymoon in July to San Antonio. And so when I came back from San Antonio, I started my training to become SGA, and that's when I started learning how to count money and how to manage this and how to track these numbers and this and that. And about, gosh, it was the next month, August of 2008, something happened that really, really made me uncomfortable and uneasy about being an SGA and being in that position. I was scheduled to close alone, so I had someone with me up until 7:30, and we closed at 9. So I'd be working by myself at night for an hour and a half. Now, some for some of you, that might not be too out of the norm. You know, you might see some mom and pop shops have one person in there and they're fine and everything. But for a professional thing like GameStop, I was like, I'm going to be alone? Why are you putting me alone? And they were like, well, you'll be fine. It's really not bad. I've closed by myself a lot, and, you know, it's not that bad. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. Okay. So about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, earlier that day that I was supposed to close alone, the assistant manager and one of the other, the common workers at GameStop are called GAs, they're game advisors. Sorry for my squeaky chair there. So the assistant manager and the GA open the safe to, I think, take the deposit to the bank from the night before. Well, apparently they never closed the safe. They, like, shut the safe, but didn't shut it all the way. And it stayed open. And about, you know, 7:30 came around, the GA left. He headed out. At about 8:45, about 15 minutes before we were closing, I was always trained to open the safe early. Because the safe had a time delay mechanism. So you set the safe early, that way it opens and, you know, you don't have to wait while you're closing. And so I went down to set the safe and found, oh, look at that, it's open. So I said, well, I can close it and reset it, which didn't make much sense to me, or I can just leave it open, cracked, and kind of try to hide it with a garbage can. So I did. I left it cracked, hit it with a garbage can, and then two gentlemen walk in. And, you know, I think nothing of it. One of the guys walks over to, like, the DS games, which are at the front of the store, and the other one walks over to the middle of the store where the PlayStation accessories were. And he asked me to look at the accessories, and I was like, okay, well, sure, why not? Because they were on magnetic hooks to where you couldn't get it off. He's like, I want to see the back of this. Can you unhook this for me? I was like, sure. And I grab the key and I unhook it. Of course, I'm not going to leave him when it's an item that can be stolen. So I'm staying with him until he puts it back and I can lock it up again. Well, while I'm doing that, his friend went around, as my back is turned to the counter, went around the counter, got on his hands and knees, and crawled behind the counter. He saw that the safe was open somehow, and he reached in and grabbed our change bag. And our change bag had quite a bit of money in it. I don't want to say how much, but quite a bit of money in it. And they leave, blah, blah, blah. So I go back around the counter. It's time to close. I lock the door, and I start counting the money, and I go into the safe. And I notice that the bag is gone. And I'm freaking out. So I call the assistant manager saying, hey, you know, have you seen the bag? He's like, it should be in the safe. I said, well, it's not. And so he has to come down. The manager came down. A manager lived out of town. So I felt bad about that. But they both came down. And they looked at the security footage, and there we saw the whole thing on the security footage. And, of course, the police came down, and they took questions. And the whole time, the police officer is kind of, he's making fun of us. Like, oh, you work with video games for a living? You know, I think he called us nerds and stuff like that. Real professional. And so he's taking down information, blah, blah, blah. He had the people's faces on the security footage. I thought they'd be caught for sure. So now corporate has to send the district manager and loss prevention in to talk to everyone about what happened. And those few days where they sent loss prevention in to talk to us, some of the hellish days I have ever had. Some of the worst days I've ever had. I didn't do anything wrong, except for keep the safe open when I shouldn't have. But this was not an inside job by myself. I would not steal so much money when I make more money than that every month on a paycheck I get regularly. I wouldn't risk that. I'm not that stupid. And so the loss prevention guy at the time was a former LAPD officer. And he was trying some Hollywood shit on me. He was trying to play good cop, bad cop, just by himself. And he'd, you know, get to know me and this and that. And then he'd, like, pull a receipt out of his pocket and unravel it. And he's like, so can you tell me about this then? And it was like a trade-in receipt. And he's like, well, we think that you are trading in games that don't exist to put money into your own account. And that shocked me because I didn't know. I thought the whole meeting was going to be about this burglary incident. It wasn't a robbery because they didn't force, threaten or anything. And so they hit me with this, oh, you were trading in games to do this, and I was like, what are you talking about? So, oh, well, we saw you pull a game off the shelf, scan it, and then put it back on the shelf. I was like, yeah. It's called shrink. Now, for those of you that don't know what shrink is, basically, when something is missing in the store, because it was probably stolen or something like that, and the inventory says you have that, but you don't, you need to make that right in the system. And I was walking by a shelf, and it was like Far Cry Instincts or something like that. And I had gotten it confused with something else Far Cry. And so I grabbed it, and I scanned it, saying, okay, well, we do have this. And then I looked in the drawer, I was like, oh, okay, well, we don't have this. And I unscanned it and put it back. And so they said that was me getting in trading credit for myself, which was ridiculous. Again, another thing that I'd never do. I'd never risk a job for trading credit. And so we went round and round. They probably questioned me for about 3 hours in the back room. And they questioned the assistant manager, and they questioned the GA that was there earlier. And unfortunately, the GA lost his job. I don't think it was an inside job. I don't think he personally had anything to do with it outside of he made a mistake. But he lost his job. And I don't know if it was just from that thing. Maybe things compounded into that, to where he lost his job, but it was such a bad situation, and I think GameStop handled it awfully, because I didn't know if I had a job for a few days there. I didn't know if I was going to be able to come into work the next week. Which, for a newlywed guy, you know, that wasn't going to be an opportune time to find a new job. But I got past it. They didn't punish me, thankfully, because I told them, if you do anything, fire me, punish me, then I'm going to contact a lawyer, because this is ridiculous. Luckily, nothing happened beyond that, and I went back to being SGA, and I was SGA for about another year. In October of 2009, I decided to step down from the position, and my son was born the previous month, so I said, you know what, I'm going to spend time with my son. I actually didn't step down from the position. I said, this is my new schedule. And they said, well, that's not going to work for us. So, you can't be SGA anymore. I was like, fine, whatever. Which I thought was kind of wrong, demoting me because of, you know, trying to be a parent, a good parent. But at the same time, you know, if that's what they want to choose, it's their company and whatever. So I went to being a GA, and I worked part-time for the rest of my tenure at GameStop. So I was in the thick of things for a few years, but as the years dragged on, I was kind of there maybe once a week. But still, I mean, I have enough experience with GameStop to tell you and answer your questions and tell you everything that I can think of at the very least. So we're going to fucking cut this right here, and we're going to go into it. So listen up, Donovan. So I asked for questions from my friends on Facebook, and I got quite a few, actually. But I'm going to try to expand on those and lengthen them out. There are a lot of questions I'm sure that you guys have, and I'm probably going to do another episode talking about GameStop, because I'm not going to remember everything right in this episode right here. I might even bring another employee on, a friend of mine that works for GameStop right now, actually. But let's go on with the questions, and I'm sure that things will spill out from there. I'm not really sure how to format this, so I'm just going to go through the questions. First question is, what do you do with all the merchandise that isn't sold or obsolete? Well, or is obsolete. It's tough to say. There's some items that get tossed, and there's some items that get shipped to a different store. The main items that get tossed are strategy guides. So if a strategy guide doesn't sell, and it depends on the strategy guide, but they're usually kept in there for maybe a year or so. Sometimes much shorter, because you have to make shelf space. And we had just volumes and volumes of strategy guides in our back room. And what they do is, and what was cool about it was, we as employees would basically see, okay, they're saying toss these, so we would just say, okay, well, I want this one. We would call our district manager and say, is it okay if we take these? And he would say yes or no, usually say yes. So I've gotten a couple of strategy guides that way. But strategy guides aren't anything too big, you know. But for the ones, and this started happening later, the district manager would say, okay, these are the ones you throw away. You slice the front cover with a box cutter. And they would do something called penny them out. What penny them out means is they would drop the price to a cent in the computer and just take that loss. And so you slice the front cover and then you throw it in the dumpster. So I guess that would like kind of devalue the strategy guide if somebody were to go into the dumpster and grab it afterwards. I guess that would be the main thing, was slicing the front cover. I've seen us throw out second party or third party controllers before. GameStop brand controllers, Afterglow controllers, stuff like that. I don't recall us throwing out any games. I knew that I've seen us, our store in particular, I've seen us throw away game boxes. And they're doing that now with DS games. They're just throwing away the boxes and keeping the DS game in a cupboard, in a glass cupboard where you can see it, which sucks. I hate that. I'm a big proponent of physical media and having the boxes and so on and so forth. But that's one of the things they did, was a lot of sports game boxes they would throw away, which it kind of irks me, where it's like, you know, you could donate that to someone who maybe needs boxes or wants them or whatever. just throw them in the trash. I don't know. The bigger items that they couldn't throw in the trash, stuff like displays, but they would have to get rid of. I've seen them put them up on eBay. Or not eBay, excuse me. Not eBay. Craigslist. Not charging any money, just saying, this is free, come get it, blah, blah, blah. The same with those display TVs, too. Those would have to be tossed. Usually employees would just take one home. Usually the manager. Because the manager always has seniority over everything. And that's one thing that I really don't like about GameStop, is the manager gets, like, all the prizes. Free games, trips to expos, this and that. They get it. So all the hard work that the GAs, the SGAs, the ASMs get, they or do, the store manager reaps all the benefits. And it's up to the store manager if they want to kind of kick that down as well. The first manager I had was cool enough that, you know, she didn't kick down everything. She kept a lot of stuff. But at the same time, she definitely did disperse games to other employees and stuff like that, which is cool. I don't remember getting anything. Really, I got like a t-shirt and stuff like that, but like she would give her assistant manager games and stuff like that. One of the things that definitely broke out into the news and everything is that the store managers all got next-gen consoles. They got Xbox Ones and PS4s and games and stuff like that. The games were all digital downloads, I believe. And it just sucks because it would be nice, instead of store managers getting a console, the store would get the console. We'd keep the consoles in the back, and on our breaks we'd be able to play these next-gen games so we can better inform. Because not everybody has the money to buy these next-gen systems, especially if you're making a, you know, if you're earning a paycheck from GameStop. Because GameStop Pay is nothing special. You start out as, I think I started out at $8 an hour, which for California is not great. And so, the raises were pretty good for retail, I gotta say. They were pretty good for retail. My raises, at least. Because I usually got a good review. But you don't make commission at GameStop. At least you don't anymore. I think way before I started, you would make commission when it was like Funko Land and EB Games. And that's one of my biggest gripes with GameStop, is that they don't pay commission, and that they pay you a wage, a certain wage, yet they expect you to work like you're working for commission. So they'll say, okay, well, you need to get this percentage of reserves or subscriptions. Now, reserves are reserves for games that are coming out that are not yet out. Subscriptions are the power-up rewards, or it used to be called the Edge Card subscription that comes with the Game Informer and all that. So you're supposed to get a certain amount of subscriptions and reservations per transactions, and it formulates into this percentage. And you know, nothing really happens, I guess. I've never seen anybody get fired because of their numbers. But at the same time, I've seen people not get scheduled because of their numbers. So they lose out on money and hours. It's certainly one of those things that GameStop is greedy for. They want you to push the numbers. They want you to push the reservations. So when you come into a GameStop store and the employee says, would you like to reserve anything today? That was kind of my limit right there. Would you like to reserve anything today? Like, Batman Arkham Asylum or this. They would say, no thank you, and I would drop it. But because the pressure is on, some people don't take that pressure well, and they say, well, I need to get a reserve here. So they push it, and they say, would you like to do this? There's nothing coming out that you're looking forward to? Nothing at all? Because even if you're interested a little bit in this game, you might as well put $5 down and blah, blah, blah. And those people, if they got the reserve, of course, would get a pat on the back because, you know, you got the reserve out of them. But that makes for a hostile customer. Because when they come in to cancel that reserve, because they didn't really want it in the first place, then that same employee, if he's doing the same transaction, or if he's doing the transaction with the same person, is gonna act like a bitch. And that's one thing I cannot stand about some GameStop employees. I always took a cancellation on a reservation like you should, like a professional. Okay, that's fine. Would you like to reserve anything else instead? No? Okay, here's your money back. What some people will do, they'll get pissed. They'll actually get in a mood where they'll mumble to the customer, or they'll treat them badly, or they'll make fun of them. And it's not necessarily this person's fault in a way. It's GameStop's fault for breeding this kind of attitude. Because they don't get anything back, because, you know, if someone cancels something, the only thing that you might lose is hours, which is a sucky way to determine who gets scheduled or not. Should be the best worker gets the most hours. Not the person that can coerce a customer into buying something they don't want, and then having that customer come back all pissed off. So, you know, that's one thing that really upset me at GameStop, was the expectations of getting certain numbers and keeping a quota when you really didn't get anything back in return. So I know that kind of ventured off the question a little bit, but I said, like I said, I'm going to kind of talk about things as they pop into my head here. So most of the stuff that doesn't get sold and becomes obsolete gets thrown in the dumpster, and that's why you see all these videos of people dumpster diving and collecting all these things. IGN had an article about it. Kotaku covered it like 2 weeks ago as well. And my feelings on dumpster diving, I guess I don't have a problem with it. It's just kind of an interesting way to go about things. You know, it's not putting you as a person in the best light if you're hopping into a dumpster to get third-party controllers and stuff like that. Usually the Xbox Live cards and the PSN cards don't have anything on them because they don't activate until you buy them. So that doesn't make any sense anyway. But that's I guess that's my personal feelings. Have I ever pulled anything out of the dumpster? Yes, I have. And I'll tell you about that right now, actually. We had a mom come in with an Xbox 360. And this was back when the Xbox 360s were still breaking all the time. And she brought it in. She said, you know, we bought this from you guys, refurbished. We bought it like a year ago and this and that. Didn't buy a warranty. I said, ma'am, there's nothing really we can do. We can trade it in, but it's not going to be for a whole lot because it is broken, blah, blah, blah. She goes, okay, fine. I'll just take it home and throw it in the trash. I said, well, we got a dumpster out back. You want to throw it back there? That's fine. And I started to think about it throughout the day. So after work, I went and looked in the dumpster, and sure enough, there was the Xbox. Because I figured, at the very least, you know, I could, you know, grab the hard drive off the top or whatever. So I brought the whole thing home and, you know, kind of tested it out and everything. What was wrong with it was the disc tray wouldn't eject. Well, I know that on Xbox 360s, you know, of course we couldn't resell that at GameStop as working. But if you bang the top as you press the eject button, the disc tray pops out. And so it kind of works. And so that was the only time that I really took something out of the dumpster. And again, I kind of do feel bad about it. It was kind of a shady thing to do. But at the same time, it was going to go to the dumpster anyway. So I guess that's how I feel about it too. These people, meh. But it's going to go to the dumpster anyway, so you might as well pull it out and save it. Next question, do you really get free games? Like retailers give you free, extra copies? Like I said before, it's usually when we get free games, they go to the manager. Like the manager will get free games. I don't know if it's as plentiful as it used to be. I don't think so. But certainly managers, I used to see my manager get copies of games all the time, games she didn't want, so she'd give it to the assistant manager or whatever. I've seen assistant manager get a game and trade it in, you know, stuff like that. So you're not supposed to do that, I guess, but they did. There's another form of getting free games, quote unquote, and this is something I don't like, and it does address a question we have later. Sometimes we have sales contests that say, okay, whoever can get the most reservations of this specific game in the district will get a free copy of this to that store. Just one copy. And that copy, again, usually goes to the manager. And it's up to the manager to say, like, our first manager would say, okay, well, whoever is driving the most reservations, whoever gets the most reservations individually in the store will get the copy. I mean, that makes sense, right? So instead of giving us money, only one person will win this game, yet all of us are trying. You know, it's a business tactic. I get it, but it's just always seemed a little janky, a little shady to me. Worst trade-in horror story. It's kind of hard to say because I've done so many trade. I've done thousands of trade-ins. I do remember one time though that a lady came in with like an Xbox and games and stuff like that. It was a substantial amount of stuff, and I was kind of going through it, and I think I asked her like a question. She's like, I don't know, this is my boyfriend's stuff, we just split up, so I'm getting rid of it. And I looked over to my manager and I said, you know, should we take this stuff? And the manager was like, yeah, let's go ahead and take the stuff. It's like, okay. And so I traded it all in, and I guess what happened was she told him what she had done, traded all the games in at GameStop and stuff like that. So he comes down, and he's this meathead UFC tap-out shirt, Red Bull guzzling type of dude. And he comes in, and he's like, give me my effing games back. You guys shouldn't have traded it in. And what the hell is wrong with you, this and that. And he's using all this kind of language. And we're like, dude, you know, sorry, but that's just, it's just what happened. I mean, and I remember my manager said, okay, we can give you your stuff back, but we need her to come back and produce ID and everything like that, and then we'll give you all your stuff back. Which, in retrospect, was a pretty dumb thing to do. Because here come the two of them, who have already been fighting for what seems like probably hours now. And they're cussing at each other. And of course, they're pissed off, so they're not really following proper etiquette. And she throws her ID down, and she's yelling at him. And that's one thing I can't stand, is people like yelling at each other and cussing in the store. And all the time, I'm just having to like stand there and get through this whole transaction. I can't crack a smile, because that will just enrage everything further. It was one of the worst things. It was more of a thing where I was there in the moment. I just felt so uncomfortable. There was another thing. There was another trade-in where I was the shift manager, and I had a really good GA working with me, and he was trading in games. And this guy was really upset. He's like, "You're giving me like 50 cents for these games. This is bullshit. This is that. You know, F this." And I turned to him because I was doing like processing on the back counter, so I was trying to catch up on the trade-in we had earlier. And I turned around to him, I said, leave. Get your games and get out of here. And he was like, well, I just want to finish this transaction. I said, you're complaining about the prices we're giving you. Obviously, you don't like the prices. Get out. And the GA, I guess he wanted to finish the transaction, so I let him finish the transaction, get the guy his money. And he's, like, backpedaling and, like, cussing at me, and I was like, okay, dude, I'm going to call the cops. He's like, call the cops, I don't give an F, and this and that. And of course, he's leaving the store as he's saying, you know, call the cops. So I pick up the phone. I wasn't actually going to call the cops unless he was standing there for a prolonged period of time, but I wanted to get him out. And then he left the store, and a few minutes later, he came back, but he didn't come inside the store. This dude stood outside looking through the window and, like, cussing at me through the window. I couldn't hear a word he was saying, but I could read lips. That was another interesting story. And then finally, yes, I have traded in an Xbox, an original Xbox, that, come to find out later, had a family of cockroaches living in it. We didn't notice that until we got it into the back, and they all started coming out for some reason. And that is beyond nasty. The hazards that come along with the GameStop job are a lot more than you think. Oh, that reminds me of another trade, and this actually might top them all. So this guy brings in a PlayStation 3, and we test all the systems with a little monitor we have on the back counter. So I'm hooking it up and everything like that, and I'm turning it on. And the PS3 loads up, and it's like the background picture is a big marijuana leaf and all that. So I giggle because I think people look stupid when they do stuff like that. And I start going through everything just to see what he has on there, because I like to see if people have, like, downloaded games, because we have to format the system, and all those games are linked to their PSN account, and they're going to basically disappear until they re-sign with a new account, or with the same account on a new system. So I was going through, and I hit the video section, and it's nothing but porn, 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 porn. And I go to the picture section, porn, 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 porn. And this guy's like, oh yeah, well, there might be, you know, there might be some, you know, oh God, I don't. And I'm actually, like, giggling, and I keep going through everything. Like, I'm not stopping or whatever, because there was nobody else in the store. It was just him and me and the other coworker I had. And I'm just getting a kick out of this, kind of like giving this guy, you know, what he deserves for being a dumbass and putting all this stuff on there. And so then the realization hit me that who knows what this guy was doing with these pictures. But I have a good idea, and he was probably jerking it onto his controller, or jerking it and then touching his controller. And I slowly put the controller down, and I have to leave and let my coworker do the rest of the transaction while I go scrub my hands until they were raw. But trade-ins could be fun at times, but, you know, when you see a person bringing in a big trade-in and it's 8:55, 5 minutes before you close, it's a pain in the ass and you don't want to do it. But what's the worst return story? I don't know if I have one in general, but returns, I don't know if I have one specifically, but returns in general are just horrible. Because people, especially with the Xbox 360, and believe me, folks, Xbox 360 might be your favorite system of all time or whatever, but that damn thing caused more headaches than it was ever worth, at least at GameStop. So I'm sure everybody knows that when you put a disc in an Xbox and you turn it on and you let it run, you do not move the system. Because if you move the system, this pretty little sound starts. And it makes a perfect circular scratch on the disc. It was actually kind of great because we knew exactly what happened if we saw that perfect circular scratch. We knew that if we saw that scratch, you were a dumbass and moved your Xbox while it was on. So people all the time would do that to their Xbox and come back to us and say, hey, listen, this scratch was on there when I got it. And we say, sir, ma'am, that scratch is made by Xbox 360s when they move. And that at that point, it would usually be a mom turning to her kid and starting to berate him for being a dumbass. But, I mean, returns in general, they suck, mainly because you can't do a trade-in and a return on the same transaction. And a lot of the times we would have people doing the whole 7-day return policy on used games, you know, acting as if that were like a rental deal. And they'd bring that back and they'd bring some games to trade in. So we'd have to do the trade in first, then the return. And it would always get confusing about how much money they would get back and all that jazz. I have a question about people asking for older video games like Super Nintendo, Nintendo 64, and older. Yeah, it happened. It happened a lot more when I first started working there, people asking for Super Nintendo games and stuff like that. It didn't happen too often later on. It would happen every once in a while. Like maybe once a month, someone would ask about it. And, you know, even that's being generous, maybe once every couple months. And we'd have to point them to the overpriced mom-and-pop shops in town. And, yeah. So, I mean, people still asked for Super Nintendo games and Nintendo 64. And we did get trade-ins, or, you know, people trying to trade in stuff, too. And some really good stuff. Like, back when Final Fantasy VII was worth, you know, $80 or whatever it was, we would get people trying to trade that in. And we'd say, hey, dude, what are you thinking? We don't trade this in, but go sell this on eBay. It's going for good money right now. And I think once somebody tried to trade in like a Super Nintendo, but yeah, it didn't happen super frequently, but it happened. So does having knowledge in games ever come into play, and do I have to have finished school to be employed? I'm seriously thinking of trying to get a job here, so this will help me out a lot. When I first started working there, the minimum was 16. You had to be 16 years old or older to work for GameStop. And I believe we hired one or two 16-year-olds, and they did not work at all, one bit. I never hired anyone personally, so I can't really say what goes into how much knowledge you have to have. I mean, I just know me personally. I had moderate knowledge of video games. I played video games all my life, but I wasn't super deep into them. As far as, like, I didn't know, like, every series. I hadn't played every game and this and that. You know, I didn't have a whole lot of money growing up, so I didn't play too many games. But I guess I knew enough. I could name enough consoles and stuff like that. Mainly with GameStop, though, it's a learning process. Nobody at GameStop knows everything about everything. And what I liked about GameStop when I first started working there was I was the sports game guy. I knew all about sports games, but I knew little about shooters or whatever. So we would have each person, and occasionally I would get calls about questions like that, which at first they didn't mind, but then they annoyed the crap out of me. But I'd say as long as you have knowledge in one specific area and that you can bring that to the table, that would be nice. So, I covered all the football games and the baseball games and wrestling games, stuff like that. Somebody had a question about that, I knew it. And so they saw that as value to them. They didn't know that right off the bat, but that was something that they got to know. And that also let me, I guess, cut a little slack when it came to, you know, if someone asked me a question about Call of Duty, I could say, I honestly do not know. You can ask this guy over here. He might know. Because I never answered anything that I didn't know. I always said, I don't know. Because I didn't want to tell anybody any wrong advice. To me, that's like the worst thing you can do to a customer is give misinformation. And I saw a lot of employees do that, too. A lot of employees gave wrong information, and you would have to correct them on the spot, and it made them look like a jackass, and it made your store look like they didn't know what they're talking about, so on and so forth. So if you want to get a job with GameStop, I don't see it any different than any other job interview. I came in there, I was more outgoing than I normally am. Normally I'm shy and introvert, but I was polite and friendly, which I'm always polite and friendly, but I definitely was not shy in the interview, and they didn't ask specifics, but they, you know, said, you do know about games and stuff like that. So of course you do need to know about games to work for GameStop, but that hasn't stopped GameStop, the corporation, hiring people from like Walgreens and stuff like that to be managers, which is another bullshit thing. They should hire from within, but sometimes they go outside. Why is it every time I go into the store, they want to sell me an Xbox One? I personally have never been specifically asked to sell one console over the other. Nobody's come to me personally and say, Donovan. Nobody's come to me personally and said, Lex, you need to sell the PlayStation 3 over the Xbox 360. You need to push this over that. No one said that in those exact terms. However, I mentioned it earlier, there are sales competitions. So if GameStop has a relationship with someone like Sony, they might say, okay, guys, this week's competition is, you know, whoever can sell the most PlayStation 3s in the district will get a Sony t-shirt or a keychain or, you know, something stupid like that. So no, specifically, you know, nobody's told in my, in another GameStop, someone might be told by the manager to sell this over this to acknowledge the competition, but me personally, I've never been told that. In fact, the exact opposite. I've been told you need to let them make the decision that they want to make, you just give them the information, which is the right way to do it, so... Why do they sell used games with no case at the same price that they would sell it if it had a case and booklet? Because for GameStop, that's semantics, basically. A case and a manual is not vital to the game, and it actually is shown in their sales that they sell just as much, you know, without the case and the manual. People who are very particular, and I'm one of those people, about the case and manual are actually... They're growing, but for the most part, they're in the minority. When you're talking about families and moms and dads, they could care less about having the original case and manual. So GameStop's not going to penalize you for not bringing in a case and manual when you trade your stuff in to get credit. They're also not going to charge less if it doesn't have that. They make their own generic cases, which the employees have to make whenever, you know, one comes in. And that's just the way it goes. We have a lot of games that come in without the case and the manual. In fact, me personally, if it's a game that I think I'm going to buy again, I always keep the case and manual if I'm trading it in, because I know there's a chance that I may find it again in it not having the case and manual. So that's just why they do that, really. They don't really care about that kind of thing. And they'll even sell new games for the same price without the original case if the case gets lost. So, why do they try to sell... Why do they try to tell me release dates for games that don't have officially announced release dates? For a game, let's use Mario Kart 8 for an example. A game that we knew was coming for it's been coming for a while now, and we haven't known a date until just recently. But we knew it was coming, so GameStop and Nintendo, for that matter, because reservations are just as important, if not more so, to the publisher than it is to GameStop. And because it's important to the publisher, it's important to GameStop. They'll want to get those reserves in early, so they'll just put a placeholder date on there. And if a date is the first of any month, it's more than likely a placeholder date. If it's the first of the year, it's most likely a placeholder date. And sometimes they'll put dates in where they don't yet know the date, but the publisher gives them, okay, well, this is like a guesstimation, here's that. Sometimes they'll have a street date on it with the exact date. And sometimes they'll have a date on it where it's like it's coming out that week. So the dates in the system, they're not only confusing to customers, they're confusing to the employees as well. But that's just basically a way to get early reservations on a game when they're not quite sure when it's coming out, but they know it is coming out for sure. What factors go into determining the price of trade-ins? There's two prices that you can get when trading in a game, besides nothing at all, of course. There's the full price. So let's just use a brand new game that came out. Let's use Titanfall, for instance. If Titanfall is worth $30 trade-in, if it's in good shape, you know, no deep scratches on the disc or whatever, it's worth $30. If it does have deep scratches on the disc, then you hit the refurbish button, and that takes off a certain amount for the game to be refurbished. Now, there's not one set price for a refurbish fee. The refurbish fee, and this is kind of weird, is taken with the total value of the game in consideration. So if Titanfall is worth 30, the refurb price may drop it down to like 15 or 10 or between there, which is kind of crazy, because what happens is you send that disc back to their facilities, they refurbish it, and they send it not necessarily back out to the same store, but they'll send it back out into the wild for someone else to sell it. And then they'll sell it at that same price of $54.99. So, in a way, it's kind of janky because the shipping, you know, it can't be that much more, but that's just the way GameStop does it. And that's the way they've always done it since I've been there. And also, it also depends on what that employee who's doing the trade-in says. So, if he thinks the scratch is too deep, he can make that call and refurbishing give you less for it and send it off to be refurbished. Or they can say, well, you know what? There's a scratch on it, but it's pretty light. I think it'll play. And they can give you full credit for it. I've certainly been on both sides of the fence where I've underestimated a scratch or where I've been, you know, right on the dot, and other people are wrong. But I think a lot of people get upset with that, the whole arbitrary thing with how much you get for a game, when it's by the numbers, pretty much. I mean, you follow something.
you follow that one code that GameStop gives you, a deep scratch, is there a crack in the middle of it, you know, send it to be refurbished, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, all in all, with GameStop, I think arbitrary is the best word to describe it in one word, because, no, cut this out, this doesn't make any sense.